Hi, my name is Kathleen Gudis, and I'll be reading 42 by Lisa Tadeo. Joan had to look beautiful. Tonight, there was a wedding in goddamned Brooklyn, farm-to-table animals talking about steel-cut oatmeal as though they'd invented the steel that cut it. In New York, the things you hate are the things you do. She worked out at least 2 hours a day. On Mondays and Tuesdays, which are the kindest days for older single women, she worked out as many as four. At 6 in the morning, she ran to her bar class in leg warmers and black Lululemon size 4. The class was a bunch of women squatting on a powder blue rug. You know the type, unless you become one. The good thing about Joan was she wasn't in denial. She didn't want to love charred octopus or be able to afford it, but she did, and she could. The only occasional problem was that Joan liked younger guys. Not like animalistically younger guys, like 22, more like 27 to 34. The word cougar is for idiots, but it was nonetheless branded into the flank steak of her triceps. Tonight, there was a wedding, and she had to look beautiful. She needed a blowout, and a wax, and a manicure, and a salt scrub, and an eyelash tint. She needed 5 hours, but she only had 4. She needed cool, hairless cheeks. She was horrified by how much she needed in a day to arrive not hating herself in the evening. She knew it wasn't only her. Everything in Manhattan was about feeding needs. Sure, I mean, it had always been like that, but lately it seems like they took up so much brain estate that a lady hardly had enough time to Instagram a photo of herself feeding each need. "Be nice to you," said signs outside of Sabone on the way to Organic Avenue. But the problem, Joan knew, was that if you be nice to you, you get fat. 27. When Joan was 27, she had started walking with the dry socket dread, the biological alarm that brings off at 4 a.m. in nice apartments, the tick-tick salty talk of eggs hatching and immediately drying up upon impact inside the choking cotton of a Tampax Super Plus. She would wake in an Irishy weather sweat, feeling lonely and receiving wedding invitations from girls that were less pretty than her. More than she wanted kids, she wanted to be in love. But Joan didn't like anyone who liked her. The guys who liked her were mostly smart and not sexy, and she really wanted someone sexy. She would even have been okay with chubby and sexy, but the chubby and sexy guys were already taken. They were 34 and dating 25-year-olds with underwire bras and smooth foreheads. The problem was Joan's generation thought they could wait longer. The problem was, they were wrong. 34. When she was 34, she dated a man who was 46, who wore Saks brand shirts and had sunken cheeks and a money clip. They ate at the bars at great restaurants every night, but then she had sex with a gritty, low East Sider bartender, and she did it without a condom on purpose. Mr. Big, her friends called the 46-year-old. They said, "What's wrong with James? He's amazing." They said amazing in a way that meant they'd never want to ride him. The bartender gave her gonorrhea, which she didn't even know still existed. Tonight, there was a wedding, and she had to look beautiful because she was in love with the groom. It was the kind of love that made her feel old and hairy. It also made her feel alive. He was an actor who was 32. She first noticed him across the room at a party because he was wildly tall. He had a grown-up look, but he was also a kid. He was good at drinking beer and playing baseball. That was something she realized now that Mr. Big didn't have. That tufted Bambi plush of youth to make her feel bad. She must like feeling bad somewhat. Everybody did, but she must like it a little more than most. He was at the bar, so she sauntered over. She walked with her butt light behind her and her boobs pendulous in front of her. She ordered a Hendrix because that was what she ordered when she was trying to get a younger guy to notice her. A grandfather clock of an older woman drinking Hendrix was a Gatsby sort of thing. It made men feel like Warren Beatty to drink beside one. "Hendrix, huh?" he said on cue. That had been 8 months ago. An entire summer passed, and summers in Manhattan are the worst. If you're single and in love with someone who isn't, if you're older and single and the younger man you were in love with is not on Facebook, but his even younger girlfriend is. Her name was Molly. She had 100 brothers. Her youth was brutal. Joan learned about Jack and Molly from Facebook. It made her feel creepy and old to click into Molly's friends and go through each of their pages one by one to see if one of them had a different photo of Jack. Jack wasn't on Facebook, which Joan loved about him. Thursdays through Saturdays, Joan played with the recurrent hair under her chin and moused through Molly's life. She found out that a few months prior, when Jack had invited Joan out for an unusual Friday night dinner, it was because Molly had been in Nantucket with her friends. She saw the pictures of furry Abercrombie blondes and one brown-haired girl on a lobster boat, fresher than a Tulum mist. Joan got super pissed about that. Then she tucked an Ambien down her throat like a child into bed and reminded herself that they weren't even having an affair. The most that had ever happened was they kissed. The kiss happened at the Spotted Pig on the secret third floor where Joan was at a famous producer's party and texted Jack to see if he wanted to come by. And he brought his friend Luke, who looked at her like he knew what her nipples tasted like. Joan drank Old Speckled Hen and didn't get drunk, and Jack drank whiskey until he became a little more selfish than usual. She was wearing a slip dress, and Luke left with some 22-year-old, and Jack put his large hand on her silk thigh, and then she took his hand and slipped his thumb under the liquidy lip of the dress, and he got a semi and kissed her. His tongue licked the hops off of her tongue. One day, 1 month later, Jack bit the bullet and decided to propose to Molly. He plans a weekend in Saratoga. He has no idea he is not interesting. He has never wanted for women. Molly's dad has a sailboat that they all take out on the Cape. At the very least, he will have a summer place to go to for the rest of his life. He receives a text the first morning in Saratoga from Joan. "Hey, buddy. Book party / clam bake out in the Hamptons. Couple of directors I can intro. This is a must come." Molly was in the shower. They were about to go horseback riding. He thought of Joan in a cream satin dress with vermilion lips beckoning to him from a foaming writer's beach. An entire 40% of him had activated Plan B. Plan B was he hightailed it out of the B&B, got on a discount from Jet Setter, and texted Molly from the road something panicked about something that happened, but that he would be back with a surprise for her later. They'd been dating for 6 years, and she had seen him bring the special bottle of Barolo with him, and she was expecting it. It was the best kind of lie, because she would know for sure she only had to wait one more night for a ring. But then a wave of something he imagined to be selflessness washed over him, and he wrote back. "Sorry, kiddo, out in Saratoga, wrong side of the Manhattan summer tracks. You don't know how bummed I am, dot, dot, dot." In her room, sadly smelling the diptyque candle she bought in case he came, Joan went on Facebook, which she'd promised herself she wouldn't do anymore. She clicked on Molly. When something hasn't changed on Facebook in several weeks, and then all of a sudden there's a new cover photo of a ring on a finger on a candlelit table, someone else might kill herself. That's something that Facebook can do. The day of a wedding is always about three people: the groom, the bride, and the person most unrequitedly in love with the groom or the bride. After 15 years of not smoking, the day of the wedding, Joan starts smoking again. For the past 2 months, Molly has been finding tissues. He doesn't vacuum, so she finds the crumpled tissues in the corner behind their bed, on his side, and on hers. It is not mere laziness. It is the triumph of his indolence over his love for her, and it is dishonest. She has her dishonesties too. She asks Jack not to shave because underneath the beard, he is gaunt and sallow and looks like the unemployable actor her father promised he would become. 26 is Molly's perfect age. She thinks of the 6 years she has spent with Jack, the 8 years she imagines she has left with her mother. She thinks of the impending 6-minute ceremony and the 43 minutes the cowboy fucked her in the hay, during which time she came and then came again against the milk-bearded mooing of the cows outside and the whistle of the humble Colorado wind, the ecstasy of the grass, the violence of the milk. Staring at the wedding bounty before her, feeling the weight of the crown of flowers in her hair, she knows there are hundreds, thousands who would be jealous, but she doesn't know them by name. She whispers the name of the cowboy to the unlit candles like a church girl, to the naked bread and the tiny daisies in tiny glass jars. She incants the name, and the name itself, like the memory of a moment before it becomes a legend, frees her enough to think the thing she has been thinking for 10,000 seconds, for 100 billion years, the thing we all think when we finally get what we want. The right way to do something might be the wrong way in the end. Joan is on her way, in her car. On her way, she receives a text from Jack. "There's a hidden message to you in my speech today. Shh." Jack is on his way in a cab. He sends the text to Joan. Not having been employed for a couple years, it makes him feel good to rattle off a text that he knows will go a long way for his career. It feels like an Excel spreadsheet. Also, how he thought to change shout out to hidden message because it sounds warmer. Finally, on the way to his wedding, he marvels at how easy it is with women. If only they knew how little time we spend thinking of them. And if only they knew how much we know about how much they think about us. In the distance, Molly sees Jack, though he doesn't see her. She sees him come into the place and check his hair and smooth his beard in the reflection on a dirty window. It's time to do this. Everything is time. You commit yourself to a course in life, to a course of treatment, but nothing lasts forever, not the good or the bad. Molly, feeling the most beautiful she will ever feel, adjusts the marigolds in her hair and thinks, 42. If she dies at 68, like all the breast-charred women before her, she'll have just 42 years left.